You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 15th of April, Tax Day. Oh, did we get taxed last night? We'll break it all down. What happened in game one? How big a deal is it? Where is the hope? It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, probably lots of geeky numbers. I'm the radio voice of the Utah Jazz and Jazz NBA insider, so thanks very much for tuning in to today's show. It's available for you on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the new app Himalaya, pretty solid app. Hope you enjoy that, as well as available for you on Spotify, Stitcher, and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Jazz. We're in Houston. There's lots of coverage available at utahjazz.com/lockedonjazz. For you, Jazz Game Rewind, Empty the Noggin, Postcast, lots of different things for you. Thanks very much, for taking this in. I do want to take a moment. You probably heard me already, but the Locked On NFL Mock Draft is our biggest project we've already ever done. And I really hope that you'll take a minute, if you're a football fan, and delve into Locked On NFL 5-day miniseries, on the NFL draft. All right, let's walk through a few things. Let me start off with the biggest and largest concern after the game one loss. The biggest and largest concern I have is the Rockets, since Clint Capella's come back, are 20-4. And unlike our second half of the season run, theirs was against a pretty solid schedule. There is a chance that this matchup is no closer than it was a year ago. That's the biggest concern that I have, that the Rockets are actually pretty close to what last year's team was, with a 60-win plus 63-win team that was a Chris Paul hamstring and a three-point absolute, you know, barrage of misses away from being the NBA champion. They would have beat Cleveland in the finals. There's a chance that this is the NBA Finals team. There's a chance these guys can beat the Warriors if they beat us. My biggest concern, honestly, after game one, is that this series might not be close. And when I say close, I mean just comparing the two teams. We are a 50-win team who had the worst record of any of the playoff, Western Conference playoff teams, other than the Clippers, against above 500 teams. And we had the worst, most losses when we led going into the fourth quarter. To me, we're really, really good, but we're not championship caliber. If we think we are, then I guess I would disagree. I just don't think we're quite, that we have an elite defense. I don't think we have the firepower or the experience yet to be championship caliber. And I think there's a chance that the Rockets are. Okay? So that's the first big concern, that there's just a chance here that they've totally clicked back in. They're 20-4 close to the season with Capella. Their number one offense coupled with a top five defense since February 1st is the real deal. The second thing is what I've talked about all week long, and why I have continually made the comment that of the seven Western Conference playoff teams, this was the one I wanted to play the least. And that is that we really, really struggle to score against them. Some of the numbers are just stunning. So the essence of it comes back to just what our style is. And some of these things I think are going to sound familiar to you. Which either is a case that I did a pretty good job of my pre-analysis, as the season, you know, in preparing you for the playoffs, and some of it is, I mean, just reality. So last night, here's the positive. Last night was our sixth worst shooting night of the year. When you take what our expected field goal percentage should have been if we had taken average shots minus what we shot, we had the sixth worst shooting performance we've had all season. The disconcerting thing is that our third worst and our eighth worst are also against the Rockets, which is strange. And the other thing that's disconcerting is that there is no other team that shows up twice in the top 10 of our worst shooting nights. The Rockets show up three times, which means that some of the things that we're struggling with are above the break. Shooting has just been absurdly bad. I believe we're 22 of 100 on above the break 3-point shots against the Rockets this year. 22 of 100. That's ridiculous. But now that's over five games and you're beginning to wonder why. The other one is just style of play. So we run the most picks and the most handoffs of any team in the league. Right? We've talked about this. It's the essence of our advantage basketball. That we get the game going. We cover up some of our guys' weaknesses. We start playing with an advantage and we move the ball and we end up with getting great looks and we get the best looks of any team in the NBA. Last night, we tried our darndest to get that going against the Rockets and couldn't. We ran 84 picks last night. That's what we do. Our points per pick, though, was 0.7 last night. 0.7. Our points per pick in the regular season is 0.97. So we tried everything we could last night to try to play the game that we're good at, which is running these picks and handoffs and things of that nature. We just couldn't do it well against them. The reason people don't run it against them is their switching style. We came awfully close last night. We ran 110 picks and handoffs last night. Now, our handoff game was good, and I think was really good, 1.17 points per handoff, and we had Quinn has something he's trying to do there, and that seems to be working. But just from an absolute offensive fundamental aspect of how this thing plays, we want to play a certain style. They switch everything 1 through 5, and they, what I call, touch switch. So when they come out to switch, if you're guarding, let's say you're guarding the man who's setting the pick, and you're going to end up on the ball handler, you actually come forward toward the ball handler and make contact with them. You also do this if it's someone on an off-ball pin down or anything of that, any interchange. So you're aggressively going toward the ball handler. The ultimate example of this was the possession which Donovan ends up out near half court and has to like toss up a shot that goes up over the shot clock. We just kept getting pushed back and further and further and further and further. The other thing they do is if you're guarding the ball handler and the pick is coming, they get below the picker as fast as possible so that then Rudy can't roll. And the Rockets did a nice job of sliding guys over on the weak side. So offensively, the Jazz have a really, really significant thing that they have to solve. And during the regular season, only the Indiana Pacers, who caught the Jazz on the fifth game of a road trip and the worst back-to-back of the year, defended the Jazz better. And that, I would say, is scheduling. And last year in the playoffs, as much as the discussion was defense, it was the Jazz' inability to score against the Rockets. The Rockets are also the number two team in the NBA defending the three. I asked Mike D'Antoni about that. He said it was luck. But now the Jazz are 22 of 100 against them in five games. It feels like it's a little bit more than luck. The defensive strategy on James Harden. Some other thoughts about the matchup and a few more thoughts on the offense as we continue here on Locked On Jazz. Remember to get the Locked On NBA Net Twitter feed and Instagram during the NBA playoffs and get all the latest news. The Twitter feed at Locked On NBA Net is a feed of feeds of all of our Locked On NBA hosts on one feed. You can also do the same at Locked On NFL if you're a draft fan and get all of them. It's all available on Locked On NBA Net. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. When you think Chevy, you think Americana. 90 plus years in Utah, the Murdochs and Chevy have been together with that bond that is kind of the bread and butter of Utah and the Murdochs. And the Murdochs' no regret policy of making sure that you have a fabulous experience in your car buying. Tyson runs the place up in Woods Cross. It's a beautiful shop right there off the freeway. They're also located in Logan. The Chevy lineup has the amazing Silverado and the incredible Colorado trucks. And now the Blazer is back for your SUV lineups. Go check it out. Go. Hey, if Tiger can win the Masters, the Blazer can come back. They're probably circa the same time. It's sweet looking. I've driven the Equinox. Really, really like that SUV. So grab that as well. The Traverse has the three rows of seats for you. It's all up at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. Stay high to Tyson and the crew. The above the break three to me is going to fall a little bit on two guys. It wasn't so bad last night. It's a little disconcerting. The two of them were one of five, and it's Ricky Rubio and Jay Crowder. Because I think that they're going to lay off of them. And because the numbers are a little of a bummer. Wide open shooting to close the year. Wide open 3-point shooting. Jay Crowder closed the year 33 of 107 on wide open threes. That's 31%. Ricky Rubio closed the year 12 of 45 on wide open shooting. That's 23-point shooting. That's 27%. They were 35 and 34 for the season, but they were in a slump when we got down to it. And I don't know that I think Kyle Korver can get shots off in this series. With the Rockets switching anything, with an attention to detail, and without the fear that Korver is going to go beat the switch off the bounce, his 10 minutes and no shot attempts was not totally surprising to me. Joe Ingles, who played very, very well against the Rockets in the playoffs last year, did not get going or get many looks. In fact, early in the game didn't get any looks. And I can't tell whether that was a one-game thing and there's something the Jazz will be able to change to open that up for Joe, or whether that's a Rockets defensive plan. And, you know, we don't have, other than maybe Donovan, a lot of guys who, if the defense decides we're taking them away, that we have a huge answer to it. You know, that's if they go into the game and just decide, I'll give Joe credit. He's dealt with this pretty well this year, and it seems to be, you know, he still is able to find a way. It doesn't feel as though last night is he had as big an impact. So then it falls to Crowder and Rubio. And those are the guys. I thought Rubio was really good last night. But wide open threes, the two of them went 1 for 5. If they start having to shoot off the bounce, it's really not good. Off the bounce threes this year, Rubio is 27%. He's 8 of his last 36. Crowder's 30 of 101 on off the bounce threes. He's 15 of his last 57, which is 26%. So that's an area where I think you're going to see, as the series develops, those guys are going to, the Jazz are going to have to find ways to get looks, and that's the way. The Jazz looks last night were not terrible. In fact, their shot distribution was okay last night. In fact, during the regular season, the Jazz had the best shot distribution of the year at 54.6. And last night, the Jazz shot distribution was 54.1. So a little off. But here's one of the aspects of why this series is so difficult. During the regular season, the Jazz have an unbelievable shot distribution advantage every night. Over the average team, the Jazz are 2.15 point advantage offensively and a nearly 2 point advantage defensively. The Jazz have a 4 point advantage every single night. Which is worth about 11 wins a season. 10.8. That's a huge, huge issue. So the Jazz on most nights of the NBA season have a shot distribution advantage. They don't have that against the Rockets. If we didn't have that, the numbers would say we're a 41 win team. If our shot distribution went flat, we no longer had advantage over average teams. Now, it's not that we don't have an advantage over average teams. We don't have an advantage over the Rockets. But losing that advantage is a really big deal. Because that's one of the reasons we win basketball games. I know it's probably a little foreign to you, unless you listen to the show all the time. That probably, you're kind of buying in probably at some point. But last night, the Rockets had slightly better shot distribution than us at 54.6. That doesn't happen to us very often. That's not something that we regularly experience. In fact, we don't allow shot distribution to be 54.6 very often. And the one thing that's a little unnerving for us is that the Rockets are able to get better shot distribution against us than just about anyone. 54.6 last night by the Rockets is the third best shot distribution that any team has had against us all year long. Philadelphia had the best. Golden State had the second best in February. And last night was the third best shot quality anyone's had against us defensively in any game all year. Which would lead to believing that the Harden force right didn't work. Which might be somewhat accurate. The concept on the defense on Harden last night was twofold. The last two times the Jazz had played James Harden, the Rockets had beat the Jazz, and James Harden had scored 40-plus points in both games and had taken 15 free throws in one game and 16 free throws in the other. So in the prior two matchups when the Jazz tried to defend Harden, Harden shot 16 free throws per game and scored 45 points a game, and the Rockets won. So now you've got to come up with a game plan to try, first priority, more than anything else, to stop James Harden. I'll explain what they were trying to do, digest whether it worked or not, and whether it's something they just need to do better, or whether it's flawed when we continue. But first, Spencer Nelson is over at Iron Gate Global Advisors, and he tells us about the crew he works with. So the idea on Harden is you don't want to foul him, and you don't want him to get a step back three. His step back three this year, he averages 1.17 points per shot on his step back three. And last night, I believe, was 4 of 7. He's incredible. He's absolutely, masterfully incredible. He draws fouls. He sees the court. He's almost impossible to guard. Well, no, he is impossible to guard. So the Jazz don't want to give him a step back. He's shooting 40% on the step back, basically. On a three. You can't give it to him. So the second thing you don't want to do is put him on the free throw line. And to the Jazz credit last night, Harden still got kind of seven step backs unofficially. That's what our stats guy had him at 4 of 7. And he only shot 3 free throws. So if you isolate it into Harden, it actually kind of worked. As crazy as that is. The three free throws he took last night, there are only 4 games all year where he's taken fewer. When Harden takes under 8 free throws in a game, which only happened this year. Sorry, I've got to search this a little differently than I thought. Which only happened, I think, 21 times. I'd like to introduce you to Iron Gate Global Advisors Financial Group out of Salt Lake City. I found out about them from Spencer Nelson, former Utah State Aggie, great basketball player. And beyond his jump shot, he's got an MBA. He's worked in private equity. He's got experience working in Wall Street, accounting and financing degrees. And he's now working with Iron Gate Financial. And here's why.
As I evaluated my options and looked at different firms, it became clear to me that the real question I needed to ask was, who would I trust managing my portfolio? And as I got to know Brett and I got to know Brian, I was able to see how they differentiate themselves from so many other wealth management firms and the real value that they create. And it was clear to me that I wanted to work with them.
Brian's a long-term financial expert. Brett, who's been in the business forever, has got an options background. They have a strategy, a direction, and a process. And most importantly, as a small firm, they understand your journey. If you'd like to find out more about Iron Gate, give Spencer a call at 888-591-0334. That's 888-591-0334 or email him at spencer@igga.com. Anytime we're talking investing, understand that past performance isn't indicative of future results. Also, options may not be for everyone. They have different risks. Make sure you consult a professional before doing anything with them. Do your due diligence. The Rockets are 11 and 10. So the Rockets are 11 and 10 when Harden shoots 7 or fewer free throws. Last two times the Jazz guarded Harden, he had 15 and 16 free throws. When Harden crosses over the 15 free throw barrier, they don't lose very often. They're 18 and 5. Okay? It's a very clear delineation in the line right there of not fouling James Harden differentiates winning and losing. Harden's three-point attempts last night, as crazy as this is, what did he end up with? 9 last night? Is that his final number? This is insane, by the way, what I'm about to tell you. I just want to make sure I have it exactly right. Last night, he ended up with a 10th. Okay. Harden has only had 11 games this year where he took fewer than 10 threes. Is that crazy? He's only had 11 games, I believe, where he's taken fewer than 10 threes. There are like 5 and 6 in those games. Honestly, 10 is suddenly the barrier. When he takes the 10th three, then they just start to win. Again, pretty clear line delineating winning and losing. And so the Jazz went to that plan. It's bizarre. you're basically conceding we can't guard you. So you're going to drive. We're going to force you to drive. We can't stay in front of you anyway. We're just going to drive you to where we want you to drive. And at one point last night, Harden only made 4 of 17 shots. So I would actually argue that the defensive strategy on James Harden, priority one, James Harden, worked. Priority two, keep James Harden off the line, worked. Priority three, keep James Harden from shooting threes, worked. Priority four, protect the rim, did not work. And the Rockets are really good. And this is part of the thing here too, is Quinn Snyder's brilliant, but Mike D'Antoni's really darn good. So the way it works is Rubio jumps up on Harden's left side. Harden drives. Gobert comes to Harden. Gobert is no longer responsible for Capella. And I'm going to rewatch the game. I haven't had a chance. We didn't get back to like one that had pizza party in Kristen's room at 1:30 in the morning. Sorry, that probably sounded weird. That's true. Like, we got back. There was nothing open. We ordered pizza in the room and went up to Kristen's room and talked about the game and watched NBA TV. It's the elegance of being on the road. So now, whoever is on Capella's side is supposed to slide in and try to deal with Capella. But it opens up the corner three-point shooter. So that gets really complicated and difficult. So you've got to get into Capella's legs. Eric Gordon is a dead-eye three-point shooter, biggest improvement from the first half of the season, the second half of the season, and he's often over there, and you don't want to leave him. Eric Gordon's a high-quadrant three-point shooter. If you watch their spacing, he just is too. Like, I can look at the numbers and show them to you. PJ Tucker's made the most corner threes of anyone in the NBA. There's a reason. And he gets those passes from Harden. It's an incredibly difficult assignment. It's the number one offensive team in the NBA. And then the Rockets have seen everything multiple times. And move their spacing around beautifully. If you watch the highlights, I'm sure you'll see him, Clint Capella dunking. Notice the different angles he comes on for his five dunks he gets from Harden. I'll chart him for you and have it for you on tomorrow's show. But there's a time where he comes angle high. There's a time he comes baseline. He's moving a lot, which makes it difficult for someone to go get their legs into him. And so I'm not sure that the defensive strategy that the Jazz implemented, which actually worked on the first three levels, works well enough on level four and level five, which is protecting the rim with help from the backside and getting to three-point shooters, is even possible. And to me, that's a tip of the hat to James Harden and the greatest offensive player the game has. Matt Bullard, who works for the Rockets broadcast, good friend of mine, has played with Akeem, played against Michael, seen Kobe. He's telling me that these guys aren't even close. That these guys are not even close to what James Harden is doing. And he's seeing it every night. There's a chance it's simply unguardable. That your two choices are a crazy scheme where you get on his left outside shoulder, force him away from his step back in his three, keep him off the free throw line, and then he picks you apart. Or letting him go for 46 and get to the free throw line 14 times. It seems like there should be something in the middle, but I'm not sure that there is. And I think the Jazz can do the scheme they had the other night better. Stay attached, not give him, but he understands what he's doing. He's holding you off with his left hand while dribbling with his right. He's hesitating. He's changing pace. He's great. That's my breakdown of game one. I'll rewatch the game today, give you more tomorrow, and then we'll get ready for Wednesday as well. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please go listen to our most exciting project we've ever aired, the Locked On NFL Mock Draft. Locked On NFL Mock Draft.